So just a few other thoughts is wanted to describe one more sutta. It's the Okosa Sutta, which is translated as insult. And one of the situations I find it most difficult not to respond with kind of ill will or aversion is when I'm being, say, attacked or verbally attacked, insulted, some hatred coming my way. So this gives a very, I think a very good perspective, a very good response to that. So I'll just describe this this sutta. So there's a Brahmin whose name is Akosaka Bharadvaja. Now, Akosaka means the insulter. And he's on his way to meet up with the Buddha. And he's upset with the Buddha because one of his clan have kind of ordained and become a disciple of the Buddha. And he's a Brahmin. It's, you know, just something that he thinks shouldn't happen. And so so he meets the Blessed One, the Buddha, and angered and displeased, he went to the Blessed One and on arrival insulted and cursed him with rude, harsh words. And remember, this is the guy's name, Brahmin Akosaka, the insulter. When this was said, the Blessed One said to him, so he responded with a question, "What do you think, Brahmin? Do friends and colleagues, relatives and kinsmen come to you as guests?" So I think this fellow is quite kind of highborn. "Yes, Master Gotama, sometimes friends, colleagues, relatives, and kinsmen come to me as guests." "And what do you think? Do you serve them with, say, foods and delicacies when they come to you as guests?" "Well, yes, sometimes I serve them with foods and delicacies." "And if they don't accept them, to whom do those foods belong?" "If they don't accept them, Master Gotama, those foods still belong to me." "In the same way, Brahmin, that which you have insulted me, that which you have taunted me, that which you have berated me, that I don't accept from you. It's all yours, Brahmin. It's all yours." And then nice kind of image. "Whoever returns insult to one who is insulting, returns taunts to one who is taunting, returns a berating to one who is berating, is said to be eating together, sharing company with that person. But I am neither eating together nor sharing company, your company, Brahmin. It's all yours. It's all yours." So then, you know, that Brahmin would have to just be with those, I think, uncomfortable feelings. And this is, I think, sometimes why we behave that way is it's so uncomfortable to be angry, we have to blast somebody and or blame someone. And that comes from just that discomfort of that anger. But then when that person doesn't accept it, then we're still left with that discomfort. Just to finish up the story, Akosaka Bharadvaja just thought this was the greatest thing, ordained with the Buddha, became enlightened, and, you know, happily ever after. It was pretty quick. So Ajahn Tiridhamo was here a couple of weeks ago, and I was chatting with him, and he was referring to another monk who's a friend of his from New Zealand, Ajahn Munindo. And it was just around the subject of giving talks, and he was saying, well, Ajahn Munindo says, when you give a talk, you have to say three things. three main points. So that made me think, well, what am I saying here? Can these be digested into three main points? So so this summary is that just to reflect on this sutta quote, with our thoughts we make our world, to see if that is true for us, to see if that corresponds to our experience as an inquiry. And I'd just like to make a quote from Ajahn Chah. That might help us to do this. Your mind is like the owner of a house, and the feelings are like the guests that come and go. But have only one chair in your house, so you can see each guest clearly. See the moods and emotions that come to bother you, then let them go. Keep mindfulness in every posture. If you just follow your moods, you won't see them. So it's a little bit like the poem by Rumi called The House, except in this house, there's only one chair. And then these moods and feelings can come and go, and one is got some perspective and then isn't just acting out of those moods and feelings. And the importance of non-harm, of ahimsa as an intention on the Buddhist path. This includes being free from anger, free from hatred, free from irritation as a motivation behind our actions. Just like we were starting with these five precepts, having and remembering our intentions gives us choice in our lives and gives us the possibility of that choice and direction. And then lastly, kind of the looking at these qualities of metta and mindfulness, how they are defined, how they are taught in early Buddhism, and how they are portrayed in the suttas, especially as similes, and how they are mutually supportive. So some ways that they kind of support each other or intersect, as I mentioned, kind of remembering the precepts, the intention of non-harm through our thoughts and actions, and just the meditation on the breath and bringing back to our meditation object or bring our attention back gently, so that gentle part is the metta and the remembering part is the mindfulness. The examples around how we can reframe or say if we're having difficulty with a person to look at them maybe through a different lens or different perspective. And in the Metta Sutta, the line, one should sustain this recollection, that this is mindfulness in the Metta Sutta, mindfulness and metta. Here's one, I found it kind of I was reading some writings of Andy Olensky, who's I mentioned before is a Pali, a translator and a scholar from, and he was kind of talking about the Metta Sutta, and then he gave this little story, personal story, and it's labeled warning. So this is from Andy Olensky. I was once asked on very short notice to read a passage at a friend's wedding and naturally reach for the Metta Sutta. Everything was going along fine until I hit the very last line. which on an audience entirely unfamiliar with Buddhism, it fell flat like a ton of bricks. Now the last line, is not born again into this world is the translation we have. But the translation he used, probably his own translation, was is not born again into a womb. And he goes on to say, so this didn't go over well at the wedding. Such a blessing is best understood in a particular context, and it is not one widely understood in our popular culture. So by all means, read the Metta Sutta at a friend's wedding, but you might want to leave off the very last phrase. And I think, maybe I'd suggest leaving off the last five lines, which includes like, oh, you don't want any sensual desire or nothing like that, and, you know, and you, these non-attachment and liberation, and probably not appropriate at a wedding, because I think there's going to be desire and, you know, and all that sort of thing. So, I'll just, there's another quote from the Dhammapada that relates to this thought of with our thoughts, we make the world. And it's speak or act with an agitated or a corrupted mind, and suffering follows as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never departing shadow. And from the Metta Sutta, kind of the inspiring section of, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downward to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. So I think I'll just stop there, and if you have any thoughts or comments on this, you can make them. So I'll ask a question. Just, was that useful to just have that suggestion of seeing if we can pay attention to more the peaceful part of our experience? How successful was that?
I had difficulty applying in a practical way meant in my life, and I'm just interested what other people might do, not just sitting with metta,
right,
and doing the phrases and so on,
right,
but actually living it.
Yeah, which is what metta's, the practice is all about. Yeah.
Making that transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody have any thoughts on that? Or how to make that transition from kind of our sitting practice? Did you say when ungenerous thoughts come up?
Yes.
Then you kind of...
Suddenly something comes to mind.
Yep.
Immediately, then I will switch and say, I wish you well.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good that you're able to catch that, because sometimes we just get kind of on a tangent. That's hard to stop. Any other thoughts on that? Yeah.
Well, one of the instructions that I've heard that I've tried, and it's often difficult, is if you're just in public, just walking, let's say you're walking to the grocery store, is anybody you meet on the way, you just offer, same kind of good wishes, And it's just a way to keep the mind space in this more, I don't know, connected, positively connected. So I was trying that for a while, and I was quite surprised at how many people would smile at me, and I was thinking, why are people smiling at me? And then it dawned on me, oh, maybe this is having some effect.
So that sounds like you're kind of priming the pump, but with what we would call neutral people, people
yeah.
that you don't have this strong kind of reaction to, where it might be easier as opposed to start to already be caught in a thought, a negative kind of thought. And then
for a difficult person who falls into a difficult category, in addition to what's your name again?
Jill,
what Jill was saying is that I've also been given the instruction, because it's often hard to sometimes give positive wishes when you're, you know, really contracted, is to actually imagine the person doing a very good deed, like being generous or kind, or so that sort of primes the mind to be seeing something that may be positive, because one, you know, an individual isn't always negative, hopefully.
Yes.
I was lucky enough to be at Berkeley 2 weeks ago.
Oh, great.
Ajahn Sawala said that we get out of our own way, let go, we'll be much more peaceful. And I've tried that. And so by not controlling things and changing my perception of how things should be, there's this abundant amount of peacefulness in all my relationships.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen that have an effect on your relationships. Yeah.
And I feel peaceful rather than very anxious, concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's remarkable. Yeah. David?
Just hurt you, and it can sometimes feel kind of false, and I think that's a big problem. And I kind of I think you might have alluded to it earlier, that sometimes just notice where you are feeling, say, animosity, where you're feeling it in the body. So just bring the thinking to yourself first, because again, in a way, that's a kind of way of becoming more aware of yourself in these situations, without really trying to generate feelings you don't really feel towards somebody. And I think that also creates a bit of distance, just that practice of experiencing it in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that if nothing else, you're not regenerating feelings of animosity. And that can maybe be the first step.
Mm-hmm.
To just create that bit of space
between
you and that person.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
I think the company that you keep is can be helpful or it can be harmful. I try to seek out people who are who do that in practice, who are less judgmental and more forgiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, certainly that's important, you know, who we're with. And sometimes we don't have a choice, say, but but where we do have a choice. Yeah. Ken?
I feel too. I've been sort of to certain people, I realize we're on a different path. And I don't say anything. I'm not going to come out with my declaration, oh, I'm a Buddhist and this and this and this. Go out with one of my friends, and we're still friends.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? It's an important question. Number one, we can, sit on in meditation and maybe repeat a few phrases, but then we get out in real situations, and metta is about relationships. That's what it's about. In the kind of traditional way of teaching metta, there's different categories. So one is instructed to start with someone, extending metta to someone where it's easy to extend metta. Maybe even like someone you love kind of unconditionally, or your pet, or so starting where it's easy. Because it is hard if we decide to start where it's hard. So the instructions are to start with a benefactor and a friend, and then move on to a neutral person, which I think is as June was saying. So that is a practice that we could easily undertake, is just as we're encountering people that we don't really know, just wish them well. Because mostly we kind of don't pay very much attention to people we don't know. But we could extend a wish of well-being. And then it gets to the difficult people, or say if one feels slighted in some way, how does one respond? So that's kind of starting at the hardest place. And there is an instruction of, one response is you might just put, let's say if you're not encountering that person all the time, but they're coming to visit you in your mind, just to try and put that person out of your mind, because it's not useful to kind of recall that person and then have ill will come up as a strategy. Well, I'm sure you're not the only person. Sorry, yes.
While I was at the monastery, I started reading a book called The Path of Art. But I think that if you're having a hard time evoking kindness, you can start with yourself. That can help a lot. Because I felt uncomfortable at first, like extending myself, but I realized I was so depleted of my own towards myself that I had nothing to send to anyone else. Start with sending it to yourself.
And that sometimes that's even challenging to wish ourselves well, right? It's not something we tend to do. I think the other thing that comes to mind is just the reflection of having the intention of not necessarily being full of metta for this difficult person, but having the intention of non-ill will, I think, is powerful. Because we don't have to be best buddies with everybody who is, you know, criticizing us or we have difficulty with. We don't have to be best buddies, but I think it is very important not to kind of like that sutta, sit down at the table with that person and share the kind of ill will and aversion and hatred meal. Yep.
He's a very strong force, represents a very strong force and a strong cultural influence. So I'm thinking then, how is the most appropriate response? Because I think many people felt a really good feel, anger and disdain. And, certainly just disbelief.
Yes. Yes. As a response, like just sort of the kind of the
real world response to that, all over people, you've got demonstrations going on, and inbox just got filled up with all kinds of organizations sending out stuff of how you have to organize and you have to change and you have to make this doesn't happen and that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I think there's nothing wrong with action, but I think the danger is that's coming from an angry place, and he's coming from an angry place, so it doesn't seem to be an effective way to respond. But certainly a response is, there's nothing wrong with responding or in a, but I think it has to be in an intelligent way. I mean, you don't want the demonstration to turn into something that is violent in itself too. And that happens as well. But you are starting with the most difficult person. So maybe choose a few neutral people to just get warmed up with.
But I mean, the reality is that is a big challenge, and it will continue to be a big challenge for quite some time. It's not to be, I was obsessed pre-election, and I think a lot of us were.
Yep. Well, and also I think one has to reflect that, there are certain things you can do and certain things that are beyond your control. So trying to control what's beyond your control is not a good recipe. But... Correct, yeah. Right. Yeah. He made that kind of strong intention when he got a different perspective on how he was treated. Well,
there's no option the other way.
of what's the other, sorry?
Sustaining the anger. Right. Definitely not going to be changed.
Hating him isn't going to change.
No.
Right. And he... Well, and it seems that the media has gotten, it's kind of like I said at the beginning, we're more interested in anger than non-anger, and that's what is shown in the media, but that doesn't it seems like somebody like Trump kind of doesn't matter. Like, he just likes his name in the news, and if it's negative press, fine. If it's positive press, fine. Like, it's...
He's just a system, right? Causes other things. Like, don't be into the media, then. They're causing, anger. Just don't be into that. Yeah. Well, for me, one thing I will do now, more during the last couple months, is actually just read long-form articles.
Mm.
They actually have content, and it's not fast food for thought.
Right.
Stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the other question is Donald Trump suffering? Is he suffering? I mean, he's causing suffering, but this is not a contented person. When I was talking with Ajahn Tiradamo, he talked about one monk who was very active on the internet and blogging all kinds of controversies and kind of attacking people, kind of unmonk-like behavior. And at one point, Ajahn Tiradamo was the kind of on the butt end of kind of falsehoods and being attacked. And it seemed like this was a similar kind of energy of this monk who was using the internet to kind of draw attention to himself through attacking people. So at a certain point, Ajahn Tiradamo, I think he called up this monk at this monastery, and he got a very different response. He was raising concerns about falsehoods, lies that were being disseminated through the internet by this person, but then Ajahn Tiradamo got a sense that this monk was kind of in an isolated place, and this was a kind of his way of interacting with the world and kind of drawing attention to himself. And he just said to this monk, I'm concerned about you. Are you all right? And that kind of cut through to a deeper level, that they could actually have a more serious or reasonable conversation. So it seemed effective that he was able to respond. First he said, different things you've said are absolutely not true. So he didn't just gloss over and say, I just, filled with love and kindness. He nails some stuff down, but then responds with, how are you doing? Are you all right? I'm concerned. And that shifted the energy totally. So I know it is a challenging situation, I don't think just sitting on one's cushion wishing everything was fine is the answer. It's maybe it's at least you're not getting into fights when you're doing that, or there's other ways of kind of acting and responding. But so I think to start with, to acknowledge that it is challenging, but not to respond in kind with kind of anger against anger. So we probably haven't solved the world problems, but my hope is that, clearly we have to start with ourselves and investigate, are we experiencing some peace? And are we, through our feeding on the media, maybe we should be more selective about our diet. So I think I'll leave it there. And thank you for your attention and just, your practice.